This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
When selling a vehicle, you will be prompted by the app to take a photo of the license plate, and then it automatically populates key details such as make, model, year, and the VIN number.
eBay International Standard Delivery is what we call Delivery Duties Unpaid, DDU.
I love life. We have so much freedom. We can sleep in and work late if we want to. You know, we're very creative at night, so you can get so much more done at night personally if you're creative at night.
I'm Alan.
And I'm Griff. And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 82. Good day, Alan.
Well, hello, Griff. Please tell me what our theme is this week.
I'm glad you asked, because our theme and top story this week is shipping. And to that end, our good friend Nate Hayward from our shipping team, you know Nate, He's going to stop by to share some tips on how to best utilize the new International Standard Delivery Program. This is the one that we just announced last month.
Okay.
And while he's here, I'll also ask Nate to help us better understand the concept of dimensional weight. And then we'll also talk about the best use of shipping discounts when you're using that option in Promotion Manager. This is a feature that I think many of our longtime sellers may not have explored. So we're gonna dive into that too.
And we have the expert at eBay, Nate Hayward.
Yeah, he's great.
He is Mr. Shipping.
He is.
Then last week at eBay Upfront in Tampa, our colleague Allison from our social media team sat down with eBay sellers Ryan and Allison Roots, otherwise known as Rally Roots, to their thousands of fans and subscribers.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan and Allison talked about how they got started selling on eBay with just $200 and how that led to annual sales of over $400,000. What an inspiring story.
Yeah, it makes me want to quit and be a seller.
Yeah, I know. Griff, we're in the wrong job. Do we have any seller questions to tackle this week?
Actually, we do. And I hope you'll stick around to help answer them.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, that's at the end of the episode, so please stick around.
And before we move on, we have a few bits of eBay news to share.
Yeah, we usually don't do this sort of like breaking news thing, but it's kind of important what's going on in the world right now as it relates to eBay. So last week, all of us here at the podcast and at eBay were, well, shocked and saddened by the images and photos coming out of one of my favorite cities, one I'm personally connected to, Nashville, Tennessee.
That's right. Several neighborhoods in Nashville and many towns outside of Nashville were devastated by several powerful tornadoes, which have disrupted communication, power, and transportation lines around Nashville. Some postal carriers have suspended service to many of the most impacted areas. eBay immediately implemented its disaster policy and protections for impacted eBay sellers. Please visit the eBay announcement board for details.
And speaking of disasters, there's also some important information about the coronavirus situation and how it may impact eBay sellers.
That's right. Very important news. Make sure you stay up to date on the announcement board, and you can reach that at ebay.com/announcements.
Yeah, because there's a recent announcement about that specific topic when it comes to pricing.
Exactly, and we'll keep that updated as the situation with coronavirus keeps changing daily. Yeah. So if we have news to share for eBay sellers, we will update the announcement board. So definitely keep an eye on that. And you can subscribe to the announcement board through the options menu on that board. That means that you'll receive an email each time a new announcement is posted.
Yeah, I do that. It's how I get my news.
It's the best.
And even then, I sometimes get it wrong.
Don't we all?
Well, I think it's me, not the news. So. Well, Alan, thanks very much for stopping by to intro in episode 82.
Let's do it.
Up next, the new eBay Motors app. And in the studio with me now is Jen Deal. Hi, Jen. So I hear you have some news.
I do. I have a new app that I'm going to talk about.
Oh, cool. Well, tell us, what is it?
It is the new and improved eBay Motors app.
eBay Motors app.
That's right.
Has there ever been an eBay Motors app?
Yes. But in December, we launched an all-new standalone eBay Motors app for auto enthusiasts on iPhone and Android.
Well, could I have one of those?
Great. Awesome. And this is powered by advanced technology.
Oh, not the basic technology.
Not the basic.
This is the advanced. Okay, good.
No, and it's meant for buying and selling vehicles directly from consumers' devices. I mean, people buy on their phone.
And that sometimes they buy very expensive cars on their phone. I've seen the reports that come out every morning.
It's insane.
Yeah. So what sets this eBay Motors app apart from, well, I don't know, the past apps or past features that we've had?
There's a few new features on it. I mean, we launched it at December, which is Christmas time, and I'm sure people are buying cars at Christmas and New Year's and
putting
New Year's
big
sale.
Red bows on them, like
exactly.
in the commercials. Yeah,
exactly. I think I've given Podcastland this tip before. Don't put a glittered red bow on the car.
It gets everywhere.
So, yeah, I actually got my car detailed last weekend. I think more glitter has come out.
Oh God, no!
It's only been 7 years.
Well, they do make a new compostable glitter that. Dissolve. So if you have to use glitter, use that.
Right. It's that. Okay. So the reason I'm actually talking about this app now is that it's getting some great traction. It's great reviews, but it's tax season time.
Oh, yeah.
And some people get refunds. And what they do with those refunds is they spend them.
On cars.
Cars, definitely on cars. We see a lot of higher ASP items sold at this time of year and cars in particular. So I wanted to make sure we talked about the app. I also know that we have just announced the last of the subcategories in the motors category that has now moved to the more simplified package pricing.
Oh, yes.
So everything from cars and trucks to other vehicles now all have, for sellers, simplified package pricing. There are three packages, essentially, and three for what we're calling the lower volume seller. So if you're selling six or more vehicles or vehicle types in a year, there's three levels. You've got premium, plus, basic, and they range from $25 to $95 to list that vehicle on the site.
Oh, and I can see, for example, if I was a consumer who only listed a car once every now and then, the basic might be good enough for me.
Yeah, it just depends on the number of photos that you want.
Or the value of the car.
The value of the car, yeah. The reserve pricing, auto checks, you know, things like that.
I saw a car for $139,000 on eBay.
Interested? Yeah. You could put on your watch list.
Yeah, it's a little out of my, a little expensive for my budget. But
I don't know.
$139,000. It was a Pontiac GTO.
Wow, okay.
It was cherry.
Cherry red.
Yeah. No, it was a cherry car.
Oh, just a cherry car.
That's a 60s thing.
I don't get it.
That's like saying it's really choice. It was cherry, man.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is a new phrase. Yeah. Let's bring that one back.
That's not.
I was envisioning an actual cherry because, you know, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobiles are actually on sale.
Yeah, I saw that on someplace I saw it. Are they on eBay at all, I wonder? They
I
should
don't know,
be.
But they're selling two of them.
Yeah. I wonder what Freud would think if he...
I don't know, but they are for sale, available.
So anyway,
it's a very timely opportunity to talk about the new app. Let's talk about the new features on the app.
Yes.
And the first thing is that you can, if you're a seller, you can actually just list with the license plate.
Well, how do you do that?
That's pretty cool. When selling a vehicle, you will be prompted by the app to take a photo of the license plate, and then it automatically populates key details such as make, model, year, and the VIN number. And so in just a few steps, in less than 5 minutes, you have created and populated a listing, including uploading images and a video, if you're so inclined.
That's amazing. Yeah. All from the license plate?
Yeah.
Well, smack me down.
I don't want to smack you down.
Okay.
The other thing that's cool is the AI-powered image sorting.
Yeah, what's that?
AI is artificial intelligence, and image sorting is basically the way that when your listing is populated with all the images, it sorts out the car exterior, the interior, the engine. That way you've basically got all images of the vehicle available and populated in the listing.
Right. So it puts all the interior photos together, all the engine compartment photos together.
Mm-hmm. That's wow. Right. Makes it look like it was done by a professional.
It's incredible.
It's pretty cool. And then the other thing, I'll call out other featured searches. You can check out featured searches ranging from low riders to lifted trucks. Mm. This is for the buyer. And if you're looking for inspiration, you can look for cars from your favorite movies or vintage cars that were popular in years past. You know, those cherry cars.
Yeah. I want a 1972 Dodge Dart. I had
and
one.
We probably have them on site.
They were cheap when I had mine. But
yeah.
So I can find something I like. Do a featured search and find it really quickly.
That's right.
This is cool.
It's very cool. So the new Motors app is available. If you haven't downloaded it yet, you can go to your Play Store or your iPhone Store.
Mm-hmm. Was that it?
That was it.
Well, Jen, I want to thank you so much for stopping by and telling us this interesting news about eBay Motors. I'm there a lot looking for cars that I'm interested in. I haven't really bit the bullet yet, but because I've already owned a classic car. I got that out of my system 20 years ago, but... there's some cars I think about buying.
I think there's some fancy ones out there.
Oh, yeah. 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 I'm looking at some fancy cars right now.
Well, enjoy the new app.
Thank you, Jen. Up next, we're going to talk shipping with Nate Hayward. Stay tuned. Hey sellers, based on your input and feedback so far, we've learned that one of your favorite topics for discussion on the podcast is anything to do with shipping. And this week, you and I are both in luck because we're going to delve into three aspects of shipping, and they are the new International Standard Delivery Program. You may have heard of that, recently announced in February. The concept of dimensional weight, which quite frankly confounds me, and the combined shipping discount tool and promotion manager. Here to help us better understand all three of these subtopics is our good friend from the shipping team, Nate Hayward. Welcome back, Nate.
Hey, thanks, Griff. Love to be here.
Well, let's start right off with the recently announced new program called eBay's International Standard Delivery. What exactly is this program?
eBay International Standard Delivery is our new shipping service for U.S. exports. We launched this in early February, and it gives all eBay sellers a great way and a great new service to ship internationally from the U.S.
Okay.
We've got some highlights that I wanted to share with you. eBay International Standard ships to 220-plus countries and territories around the world. So you got great coverage in terms of destinations. Second is that we've really launched this with simple and easy-to-understand rates. So we've simplified the rate cards. We've tried to simplify the zones around the world. We just have four zones.
You've divided the world into four parts?
We've divided the world into four parts. Canada, Mexico, Europe, and the rest of the world.
Oh, that makes sense. So it's based on the distance from U.S.
Exactly. Since the U.S. export only, it really is like looking to be really competitive in our neighboring countries, Canada and Mexico, our high-velocity countries, Europe, and simplify the rest of the world from that standpoint.
Okay, makes sense.
Yep. And the third part is that you've got automatic delivery protection. So shipment protection on eBay International Standard, up to $100 included in the shipping cost. So if your item is lost or damaged in transit, you can raise a claim and you're covered up to $100.
Is it any different than the insurance like USPS would offer for international shipping? They can put you, quite frankly, through the ringer if you file a claim.
It is. So you can initiate the claim directly from eBay, which is really nice. And we've got a really speedy claims processing time. Postal's, I think, is very long.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It has really great payout rates and we're really happy with the program from what we've seen.
So how does the International Standard Delivery Program differ from an old program that eBay's had for a while called the Global Shipping Program, which sellers like myself utilize? I assume there's some major differences. And I guess what it is this is just another option for sellers if they don't want to use the Global Shipping Program.
You got it. So eBay International Standard Delivery is not Global Shipping Program.
Right.
And the Global Shipping Program, primary difference is that Global Shipping Program is what we call a delivery duties paid program, which some will refer to that as DDP. And what this really means at the end of the day is that buyers during eBay's checkout are paying duties and taxes during the eBay checkout transaction.
Right. These are the fees that a country would assess for this type of item at that price coming into the country.
You got it. And so eBay International Standard Delivery is what we call Deliver Duties Unpaid, DDU. And we do not, during checkout, collect duties and taxes.
So the buyer may end up having to pay them before they can take possession of the item.
That's right. Okay. So the buyer may have to pay those in their destination country, but we do not collect them up front.
Okay, it makes sense.
The other key difference, I think, between eBay International Standard Delivery and GSP is that the seller is fully protected once the item is delivered with GSP to the hub. If you've been in GSP, you ship it to Kentucky, you're responsible as a seller to get it to Kentucky. But if it arrives in Kentucky, is in the same state or status, not damaged in transit.
And they inspect almost every item that comes through. I was there once and I saw them do it.
They do.
They open the package to make sure it's what it says it is.
That's right. And then once it's in the hub, that's when the Global Shipping Program takes over responsibility for that item for items not received and significantly not described, damaged. Yeah. And with eBay International Standard Delivery, the seller's ultimately responsible to get it to the buyer.
Right.
However, that's where the shipping protection plan comes in. So we've added in some protections in case anything happens. And that protection covers you end to end. So once it leaves your hands in the U.S., that's when the coverage starts on eBay International Standard Delivery.
All right. So this is, again, another option. There are sellers who would just love Global Shipping Program. And there's others that just rather do it themselves.
Yep.
For whatever given reason. So this is another option for those sellers who prefer not to ship through GSP.
That's right. For those sellers that haven't preferred to ship through GSP in the past, we wanted to introduce a new service. And really, the primary motivation for us was a lot of the uncertainty around how is USPS International Services going to last in
the competitive landscape.
Competitive landscape.
Exactly. Yeah. That makes sense.
There was a lot of ambiguity in the fourth quarter last year. Like a lot of questions, will USPS and the US State Department pull out of the UPU?
Oh, right.
And will we be able to ship with USPS internationally anymore? What are the rates for USPS International going to be? We didn't want the sellers to have to navigate that complex situation that's kind of out of everyone's control. And so we introduced this new shipping service so that you can be rest assured you've got a way to export on your own, even if USPS brings up their rates or isn't available or pulls out of the UPU. Yeah. Etc.
There's a lot of reasons why you might want to consider this. The UPU one was a big one. So if I want to learn more, where do I go?
If you want to learn more, you can go to the Seller Hub. There's a shipping section in the Seller Hub. And right there, we've got a tab and a page, which is all about eBay International Standard Delivery.
So if you're interested in checking this out, and I assume you are, just go to Seller Center and go to the shipping area. And there's a big promotion there for explaining what International Standard Delivery does. And I also assume the rates are competitive or cheaper than a lot of the USPS international rates.
Yeah. So on top of being simplified with only the four zones around the world that you need to consider, the rates are super competitive.
Okay, and you're so, winning like, me over now.
Yeah, right? Look at, I'll just give you one for instance. For a 1 pound package into Canada from anywhere in the US, USPS prices would be about $18 and $19 on First Class Package International. eBay International Standard Delivery, $16.
All right,
so you got $2 to $3 savings right there on that one example.
And that, for some sellers, they're going to say, well, that doesn't sound like that big a discount. But if you're doing any velocity at all with international shipping, this is a make or break. This is a great way of saving money.
You know, Griff, one other question that we have gotten in the past is about like combining orders into a single shipment.
Yeah.
Not supported with global shipping programs.
No, and you're right, it's not.
And with eBay International and with USPS International Services, if you have two orders to the same buyer, same address, you can combine them into a single shipment. eBay International supports that as well.
So there you go. There's some of the pros, most of the pros, a few little, maybe not so pros. I don't want to call them cons, but check it out. It's the eBay International Standard Delivery. So that was our first topic we were going to talk about, Nate. Now let's move on to a concept that, quite frankly, I don't have a physics degree. I don't understand what it means because it sounds almost oxymoronic to me. Dimensional weight. I know what a dimension is and I know what weight is. I don't understand what they mean together. So we're either in the fourth or fifth dimension at this point. Now, all the carriers seem to be including this factor of dimensional weight in how they calculate the cost for shipping of certain items in certain size packages. What does this term actually mean?
Sure. We get this question a lot, and it is confusing. So let me help try to break it down. I like to start with vocabulary. Scale weight, that's the fully packaged item when you place it on a scale. What does the scale say? Dimensional weight, this is really a mathematical representation of volume. If you think about volume or how large an item is, we're trying to get to a factor that can be compared to the scale weight with some math. So you take the length, the width, and the height, and you multiply those by each other and then divide them by a dimensional factor. Lots of math.
What's the dimensional factor?
Dimensional factor actually varies by shipping service.
Which USPS is?
USPS uses a 166 dimensional factor, and that's fairly common in the industry.
It's a constant. They use it as a constant.
They use, yes, that's right. Like FedEx may have different dimensional factors, but at eBay labels, when you print with FedEx, we've got 166 on FedEx Ground, FedEx Home Delivery, and FedEx 2-Day, which is better than what you get, for instance, at the FedEx counter.
Oh, yeah. Don't go to the FedEx counter. It's a pain in the neck. Just buy your labels on eBay.
So there's scale weight. That's what it weighs on the scale. Dimensional weight, which is this mathematical representation of the volume. Mm-hmm. And then the greater of the two is used to determine the billable weight. So the weight which you will be billed at. So if you have a 1 pound item on the scale and an 11 pound item via dimensions, that's length by width by height divided by 166, that may come out to like 11.
Okay, now I'm getting it. This means if I'm going to ship a 1 pound item, I want it to be in the smallest box possible.
You nailed it.
So because I want to get the scalable weight, not the dimensional weight, which if it's bigger, and I've seen some, I'm not going to say who, you can imagine, marketplaces that are merchants that ship. You know, I buy something like an iPhone cover, and it comes in a box that's 12 inches by 12 inches by 12 inches with a bunch of padding inside. I'm assuming they're paying more than if they just shipped it in a smaller box.
That's right.
So that's dimension. Now I get it. Now I understand what dimensional weight
is. I love a visual. I'll leave with a visual representation that resonates with me.
Okay.
Imagine a coffee cup, right? It's very small, and you fill it with lead. Very, very heavy.
Very bad drink in the morning.
Sometimes people refer to their coffee as lead.
As lead, right.
But you've got a very, very heavy, very, very small item. Let's say the weight of that coffee cup filled with lead weighs 6 pounds on a scale, but it can fit into a 4x4x3 box.
Right.
That will have a very small dimensional weight, volumetric weight, because of the small dimensions, but it will have a very heavy scale weight.
Right.
So to bill that item, you would use the greater of scale or dimensional weight. And in this case, with the lead coffee cup, scale is going to be greater than volume or dimensions. In the opposite of that example, a very, very light item, like a large box filled with down feathers or pillows.
For the winter. Fill your duvet.
So it's a very, very light item, maybe only 2 pounds on the scale, but it's very large, like, right? These pillows are huge. And so the dimensional weight or the volume that package takes up in a truck or in an airplane would be very large. And so the dimensional weight of this shipment would be 15 pounds and the scale weight be 3 pounds. You're going to be billed based on the greater of the two, 3 versus 15. 15 is greater. 15 will be your billable weight.
I can poke a hole in your example I just thought of. You can take that down pillow, and if you're really careful, you can scrunch it down and fold it and roll it so that it fits into as small a space as possible.
And this actually speaks to the best practice advice, is like, try to fit your item safely for transport into the smallest shipping box that's possible as a way to optimize your shipping cost.
Couldn't have said it clearer. Now, you finally have made me understand what dimensional weight means, and I think I owe you a drink and a dozen roses for that.
So. We have a PDF that I think lays this out as well.
Really? Where?
ebay.com/carriers, and then scroll about halfway down the page, and there's a section called How to Calculate Dimensional Weight.
Oh, okay. So if the podcast segment we just did wasn't clear enough for you, then go to that link and look for the PDF. It should help. Now, Nate, let's explore one of our third options here, or a third topic when it comes to shipping. And it's something called promotional shipping discounts. You can find these under the promotions tab in Seller Hub. I got to confess up front, I don't use these, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But I know lots of sellers who should be if they're not using it, because they could actually make more sales. But would you give us an outline of what this particular promotional tool called shipping discounts has to offer an eBay seller in the way of boosting their sales?
I love the shipping discount promotion tool. It really helps you market your merchandise to interested buyers. First, by utilizing the shipping discounts, you can create special offers that encourage buyers, frankly, to shop more.
You like that?
Best of all, it's free for store subscribers. Super quick, easy setup. Let me walk through 3 simple steps.
Okay.
Yeah. First, you have to find the tool. It's available on the marketing tab inside of Seller Hub. Under that tab, there's a section called promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're into managing your promotions page, you'd click to create a promotion and select shipping discounts.
Yeah.
Second, customize your promotion for shipping discounts.
So this is where you're setting up a promotion.
You set up the promotion. You know, I think it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, I went through it this morning. It is pretty straightforward.
That's right. Yeah. So some types of choices that you get there would be like, how do you want to offer promotion on shipping? Is it based on the order size? Is it based on the quantity of items purchased?
Those are the big two. Ones. But you can also select which inventory. It doesn't have to be the same listing. It could be from a completely separate listing. You can include it by category. Okay. What I was impressed with was how much customization there is with this tool.
It really is. You can say, I want this promotion to apply for this type of inventory or for this type of order size, for this type of quantity on orders. And then third is that you're going to select, when do you want this promotion to run? So you can set a duration. I want this to run until the end of the month. I want this to run through the end of the second quarter. I want this to run through the end of the year. You get to pick and you get to set that end date. And then once you've completed that section, so first you find it, then you set up the promotion, apply it to the inventory that you want, and then you set how long you want that promotion to run. then you review, and then you launch.
It's pretty easy.
Goes into effect immediately.
So what are some of the best practices that eBay or maybe even Nate suggests when a seller's creating a shipping discount promotion? And I ask this for a reason, because I've seen some shipping discounts that are pretty, they're pretty compelling. They force the money out of my wallet. And then there's others that just, you feel blah, you walk away. So what are the best practices here?
So three primary tips for creating a successful shipping discount. First is, look at your average order size today. If your average order size is $35, I would think about making a shipping promotion that tries to encourage buyers to spend more than the average.
Right.
So I might want to get them to spend $50 with me, and I'll promote them in order to do so. So look at what your average order size and set a threshold for your promotion that's a little bit above that average order size. Second, buyers are still really responding to free shipping. Go figure. And so consider adding a promotion that like targets free shipping. Hey, spend more than $50 with me, get free shipping.
Oh, yeah.
Buy more than two items with me, get free shipping.
This one, it speaks directly to me. I got to tell you, two nights ago, I order from DoorDash a lot. I have a Chinese restaurant I like. I ordered one entree, and then it said, just $3 more and you get free delivery. And I thought, okay. What was cool is there was nothing on their menu that was $3.
Of course not.
I had to spend an extra $8. So there I got the hot and sour soup.
And you did.
And yeah. I liked it.
And you got free delivery.
And I was happy.
Yeah. You know, that totally speaks to me. I had the same thing happen the other day. I was ordering a new swimsuit. The swimsuit, I think, was like $35. And free shipping was at $40. And again, I couldn't find anything in that same store for $5 to get to the shipping
threshold.
But did
that stop you? Oh, no.
No. So I bought two swimsuits.
Of course.
Yeah. So then I got free shipping. Yeah,
you never know when the second one might come in handy.
You got it. So think about that stuff. And then third, successful shipping discount offers, I think, also speak to like speed and class of service. So Right. Think about like, hey, order two items for me, get upgraded speed, get free two-day delivery, get something around an upgrade of service.
I mean, if it's going to be still profitable at that amount.
You got it.
I believe also, Nate, that we have a guide available online for sellers who want to learn more about these shipping promotion best practices and what's available.
That's right. We don't have a great vanity URL for that guide.
Unfortunately.
But we'll add a link to the script, I think.
Yes, there'll be a link in the script. So if you're not familiar how this works, every episode of the eBay for Business podcast has a episode page on community under ebay.com/podcast. So just go to this week's episode number, which is 82, then click the title of the episode on the next page, and you'll see a tab there for transcript. And any links referenced in today's episode, like the ones we referenced today for shipping, they'll be listed there for easy access. Nate, I want to thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, I love coming. Thanks for the invite.
If only because you cleared the whole issue of dimensional weight for me, I will forever be in your debt. Thank you.
I'm going to go get some more lead coffee.
Nate, thank you so much.
Thanks, Griff.
Nate Hayward works on the eBay shipping team, and he knows just about everything there is for shipping. We'll have him in again.
Hi, I'm Allison eBay, and joining us today is Ryan and Allie Roots. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
We are super excited to do this podcast. Thanks for having us.
How did you guys get started selling on eBay?
Well, I personally think that where it started, you were watching TV shows and you're a little bit inspired by the idea of reselling something physical because Ryan always had businesses where he sold services and nothing actually physical.
Right. My previous business before we started selling on eBay was social media management. So it was always this like service industry type business. And I got really fatigued with dealing with that. And I was working like 80 to 100 hours a week and I just wasn't happy with it. So we ended up getting out of that business. And how we got into eBay was we were sitting at home kind of just like looking for something to do. Like, what's the next move? What should we do?
Can we do something together?
Can we do something together?
Let's try to do something together.
Yeah. And I remembered back in the day, my family, we used to go to garage sales to find stuff cheap because we didn't grow up very wealthy.
And me either.
Yeah.
We did not have money growing up.
So one Saturday morning, I looked at Allie and I was like, hey, why don't we just go out to some garage sales and see if we can find anything? I have an old eBay account. I was like, let's just put some stuff on eBay from garage sales and see if we can make some money.
Yeah, and I told Ryan if he wants to find anything around the house to sell, just let me know. And he found this really cool cupcake mug of mine that my grandmother gave me as a gift and researched it, and it was worth around $20. So he sold my cupcake mug. I let him.
You'll never let that go.
I'll never let it go.
When did you first start selling? What?
I actually sold my first thing on eBay when I was 14 years old. It was back when you could do e-delivery of products, like to people's emails. And I sold a little like book pamphlet that my dad wrote about the timeshare industry because he was in the timeshare industry. I sold it on eBay without him knowing. He had no idea that I was selling his book.
It's so
and
funny.
I was making like $1,000 a month selling his book on eBay. And then eventually he was like, where are you getting the money to buy these things that you
he's a little hustler. And I know.
And he was my dad's always been super, super supportive. So he was proud. He was like, wow, that's like super entrepreneurial.
He's probably mad he didn't think of it himself.
Yeah. So we kept doing it and splitting the profits and it was great. But that was the first thing when I was 14 ever sold on eBay. But more recently, we've been full-time selling on eBay for 5 years.
So you've been together for longer than 5 years. How long was it after you got together that you started to sell on eBay?
I'm thinking 6 or 7 years we were together before we started selling on eBay.
Yeah, it would be 6 because if we've been selling for 5 years and we've been together for 11 years.
6 years, yeah.
So it has to be, yeah.
Did you bring it up to him that maybe we should start something different or was it a joint?
Yeah, actually, Ryan was really miserable and he was working himself to the bone. It wasn't really, there was no like joy anymore left in you with the business. And in the past, you'd always been a lot happier with your businesses. And I just was, we were at home one day and you were just so miserable. I was worried about Ryan. I was like, at this point, he could be suicidal. And I told him I didn't want to come home to him dead on our couch one day. And it was very emotional. And I was like, we have to make a change. This isn't okay anymore. Something has to give. Mm-hmm. You need to do something different. Even if you take a pay cut, it's worth it for your happiness.
Right.
And we have to figure it out.
And I took that advice to heart. And within a month, the business was liquidated and we started a new journey. None of this would have happened if it wasn't for both of us, right? I would probably still be working myself to the bone. I have a hard time separating myself from go, 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 work, work, work. And Allison kind of is there to say, all right, let's take a break and let's keep our relationship good because that's very important. And then also our lifestyle, like we try to travel as much as we possibly can. Even our YouTube channel, our motto is buy, sell, travel. So we buy stuff, sell it in order to have the freedom and income to be able to travel.
Can you tell me a little bit about where your business is now? Because we just talked about where it started, but you're talking, you know, about traveling and, you know, you have the ability to travel.
Yeah. So originally, I do want to say that our business started in our guest room and then it grew and we stored our items in our garage. And then once we grew out of our garage, we moved into a warehouse. Small warehouse that was unair conditioned.
In Florida.
And then we realized we needed to move into a larger warehouse that was fully air conditioned. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we recently purchased a property with a 3 times larger warehouse, basically. So a 3,400 square foot warehouse that's air conditioned. And that's where we are now with the business size wise. So we went from our guest room to a giant warehouse.
Right.
Has that transition for you, Ryan, been difficult at all? Going from working for yourself as a social media manager to transitioning to this partnership. What has that transition been like?
Certain things have been really easy and certain things have been kind of difficult for me because I'm kind of a control freak when it comes to business. So it takes time for me to let other people help me. And that's something that I've had to learn over the past few years to be like, okay, you're better at that than me. So you handle that and let me focus on what I'm good at. So that's taken some time to get used to, but I think we're in a good position now.
So when did you guys realize that you guys could work together?
Since the beginning, we've been immediate best friends. I know that there's the whole thing like never mix friendships and relationships with business. But my past businesses, I worked with my dad. So I already kind of had that family dynamic and we had worked out a way to work together. So I think that when we started working together, it was pretty much a click from the beginning. It just, we had to figure out what roles were right for each of us.
We are very compatible and we do have a lot of respect for one another. Mm-hmm. And I know where Ryan's strong suits are and where his weaknesses are and goes the same with me. Like I have a lot of weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So in strong suits. So we definitely personally, on a personal level, understand each other well enough to figure out the dynamics and what he should focus on and what I should focus on when it comes to business, and which
it,
is good.
It works well for us. I mean, I know it sounds like it's too good to be true, but in 11 years, we've only really had one argument, real argument.
Yeah.
And it was right before we got married because we were both so stressed out.
But and exhausted.
Other than that, we're just really good at communicating with each other. If something's bothering Allie, she'll let me know. And same to me.
And I'm not afraid to let him know.
Yeah. And we try not to take it to heart.
Ryan gets bored easily. So he's always working.
I do. But that's another reason why we work well together. I mean, I have 12 ideas a week for new businesses. And Allie has to go, well, why don't you just try that one and let's go from there.
Yeah, we'll sit down, we'll talk about it and figure out like the viability of the idea to make sure that it is something that not only we could add to our business, that it would make our business a bit better and help other people, right?
Yeah.
Because you only really want to have little businesses on the side to help people if your main business is helping people.
Right.
So everything has to be actually helpful.
Right.
How integral is your business to your relationship?
It's a huge part. I mean, we work together every single day on everything in business and personal. So it's kind of intertwined. We do make sure that we are keeping business as separate as we can from our personal lives. So,
which is very difficult and does not always happen that way.
Yeah. But we try to have cutoffs, you know, so we'll still say after 6 o'clock, it's kind of friends and our time. I mean, sometimes if there's nothing going on, I'll work on eBay or I'll edit a YouTube video or something. But most of the time, that's time for us and our friendships. And then on the weekends, we go garage sailing. But besides that, we use that time to spend with our friends because most of our friends have traditional jobs. So weekends is when we get to hang out with people as well.
What is difficult is to turn off the whole social media and the demand of constantly. There's always people like asking questions and sending messages and they need help with this and they need help with that. So that is really difficult for Ryan to turn off whenever social media is like right in your hand. But when we travel, that's when we really get away. So we do find the balance where, Ryan, it is difficult for you to shut off because you're always looking at the social media like, what are these...
That's also a side of the business that I really enjoy. We read and try to comment back on every single YouTube comment that we get, which is incredibly difficult now.
Yes.
But it's still something that I love to do because I want to see that our videos are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And I'd rather you be doing that than just scrolling on Facebook looking at ridiculous nothingness, which a lot of people end up doing. Yeah.
My Facebook feed is business stuff and French bulldogs. That's about it.
Rally Roots is big. You guys are I would consider a YouTube influencer. Tell me what that was like when you first started.
Yes, I didn't want to be a part of YouTube when we first started, when Ryan told me this crazy idea, because he does have a lot of crazy ideas. And I told him, though, I didn't want to be part of it. I support it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited for you. And if that's what you want to do, you do that.
The channel.
And maybe I'll be in a couple of things here and there, like videos and whatnot, but I didn't want to be a part of it. So it started off our YouTube channel as Ryan Roots.
Yeah, it was called Ryan Roots at the beginning. And the first few videos were, Allie was kind of in them in the background a little bit, but she wasn't really part of it for the first few videos. And then I was like, hey, babe, look, everybody's kind of nice on YouTube. This is a good community and people are saying thank you and we're actually benefiting.
And you were so excited about it. It was pretty cute.
Yeah. Well, YouTube's my outlet. I don't consider myself to be a very creative person. I don't write or do art or anything like that. But I make all of our YouTube videos and edit all of them. And that's kind of my outlet.
You are creative. You just had to find something that you could pour your creativity into. And YouTube really has been that outlet for you.
We've been on YouTube for just over 3 years. The first year was a grind. It was definitely less than 10,000 subscribers in the first year, which is a lot for some people, but it didn't seem like much was happening. We put out over 100 videos the first year.
And for the amount of hours we spent filming and then that you spent editing, because you did all of the editing because you were like, this is my thing. I'm doing all of the editing. And I was fine with that because, of course, I didn't even want to have anything to do with it, let alone edit. After that first year, we looked back and we thought to ourselves, man, the amount of hours you spent on everything.
I was making like $1.75 an hour. or something like that, if you broke it down like that. But that wasn't the point. And we get that question a lot. People go, well, don't you only make YouTube videos because you make money from YouTube videos?
Like, not for the first 2 years.
Exactly. Like, we do make money from YouTube now, but for the first 2 years, we put those videos out to benefit other people. Document our journey and then also show people the wins that we had and the mistakes that we made.
Yeah. Even in the second year, whenever it started to pick up, an issue was the amount of hours, again, that we spent. Even though the videos started to actually make money, for the amount of hours you were putting in, you weren't making money.
But it's still true today. Like, we, money aside, we make videos on YouTube to benefit other people. And I think that's the main reason why our channels grew so fast in the community, is because people aren't dumb. They can tell when you're genuine and when you're not genuine.
And if you're trying to sell them something, like, it wasn't a means to an end. We didn't start the channel to try to sell people something, which a lot of people will start channels because they have an end goal in mind, which is particularly to sell courses, like in our industry.
Yeah.
So people will start a video where they show all their Amazon sales and how big their account is, and they won't even be on YouTube that long. And then they start to try to sell people.
Correct.
And people don't like that and don't want that.
Right.
They don't want to be sold. People just want you to be genuine and help them out. And that's what our goal always was.
It still is.
And still is. Yes. Specify.
Have there been any times when you thought you would quit? Both YouTube or reselling?
In the beginning, reselling was difficult. We did think at a couple of points we might quit because we weren't making enough sales. And we were like, this isn't sustainable. How do we continue to find enough products and more products? We were only doing one-off products. And then that led us to realize that we have to scale.
Yeah.
So then we tried to figure out how to scale. And you did. Mm-hmm. You found someone that wholesaled. And then we scaled up.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever considered quitting entirely, but there's definitely aspects of the business that we have quit. So in the beginning, you know, we had ideas of maybe we'll buy furniture and redo the furniture and sell it locally. And that was just so much work. And again, we were in that warehouse with no AC. So I think I did like a couple pieces of furniture and I was like, this isn't the life that I want. So we pivoted. As in any business, you find what works, but eventually you do find something that works. And it was never a quitting thing, because when I go into something, I go in with everything. But there were times where our bank account got really low and we were like, okay, well, this is it. Like, if we don't have a good week next week, it's kind of over. And then you strap up and figure it out. And that's what we did.
And you go and you hustle. Like,
yeah, you hustle.
That term hustle, it's so true. You just go to all the garage sales and all the thrift stores and you make sure that you list everything immediately. You don't just let it sit there and wonder why you're not making money. I mean, we really put the effort and time into it whenever we were struggling, because we knew if we didn't, that's what we were going to get back. Because that's how eBay works.
Right.
Like, you get back what you put in.
Do you feel like you're enjoying the way things are with your on YouTube, with eBay? I know that you have other things in the mix as well.
Yeah.
How am I now?
You're great now.
Hey.
And I can actually tell you to take a break, and you will take a break because you know you can take a break and everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely happy. I love life.
Sweet.
We have so much freedom. We can sleep in and work late if we want to. You know, we're very creative at night. So you can get so much more done at night personally if you're creative at night than in the morning. So
I think that my goals, my life goals have changed from when I was really stressed out. Back then, I wanted to make $1 billion and build the next Facebook, Google. And now we're at the point now where we don't need to make millions and millions of dollars. We just want to live a comfortable life with the freedom to be able to travel and then benefit as many people as we can. And we get the question all the time, like, where's your growth going from here? Where do you see your business in the next 5 years? And our answer to that, honestly, is if it stayed the same, if we just maintained where we are, we would be incredibly happy.
Yeah, more money, more problems. And I'm happy where we are. I don't want more stress. I mean, if you want more money, you have to do more things.
Yeah.
And more things causes more stress. And then we won't have the lifestyle that we have. Mm-hmm. And we're comfortable. We're not greedy. We don't need more. Maybe we want more here and there, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we have, you know, what we need and some of the things that we want, I'm happy. And I don't want to grow
and
significantly
that,
more.
That balance, that work-life balance has kind of worked itself out now, where we'll work really, really hard for 3 months straight and then we'll go take a month vacation.
What would you tell other couples who are trying to work together on how to partner?
That's such a good question.
That is a very good question. Okay. understanding your strong suits and then your weaknesses, maybe making a list in the beginning and saying, this is what I'm really good at and this is not what I'm good at. And then diagramming your list and figure out like, hey, this is what you do. This is what I do. And then if you have shared tasks, make sure it's very clear that those are shared tasks and make sure that the tasks that you want to take are 100% yours and that you make that clear.
And then I would say to find a passion, what you're passionate about selling, both individuals. I think that most of the time when people start reselling, it's an individual thing first, and then they show their spouse what they're doing. And typically their spouse goes, well, that's insane. That's not going to work.
Yeah, if you can't make a living doing that.
Yeah. So we've had multiple times where we'll have a husband or a wife or a couple reach out to their partner and say, hey, you know, I want to resell. And their partner goes, well, I don't know if that'll work. And what we find works best is if you can get your spouse to find their passion. So if they're into tools and you can go out to garage sales and try to look for tools that you're passionate about, or, you know, I'm really into vintage t-shirts. So I love 80s and 90s t-shirts. That's my passion. I try to find that. So if you can find something that you're actually passionate about, it makes the job less of a job. And you can bring your spouse in that way too. And it's even better if you can find something that you're both into, and then you right. can both kind of focus on that too.
It's easier to sell something you know yeah. and then branch your way out.
There's nothing like finding something that you think's really cool and then showing your spouse, and then Allison being like, that is really cool. You know, yeah. I'll find something that she's also interested in. We're both interested in it. And then we both get to follow the process of listing it and seeing what it sells for. And it's exciting.
To somebody else who thinks it's really
to somebody,
cool.
Yeah.
Just like a cool train.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you being on the podcast.
Of course.
I think that there is some really, really great advice that you gave, and the story that you share is amazing.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Alan, I hear from many, many sellers now who email us about the podcast that they love when we do seller questions.
Oh, fantastic. And so good to hear people are contacting us. I know you were very sad for a while that we were sitting here in our little closet and nobody was contacting us. We're just sending this podcast out into the wild and hoping people listen. So
yeah, it puts me in my best passive aggressive stance. It's okay. You never write. You never call. We'll just sit in the dark studio. But today we have some questions, and we have enough now that we have several episodes in the future we can ask.
Fantastic. Always great to hear from sellers.
So the first seller that we're going to hear from emailed us at podcast@ebay.com. Well, Amy has an interesting email. Would you care to read it?
Hi, Griffin Allen. It's me, Amy, from eBay store name Ageless Buys, seller name AmyEsk02. I've got another question for you. I have a current listing for a Disney Snow White and Three Dwarfs figure. The listing has nearly 1,400 views, and it currently has 6 watchers. Amy goes on to say she's thinking of switching the listing from a fixed price to an auction, but she's concerned about what will happen to watchers. From what she can see, it appears that eBay would actually end the fixed price listing and then switch it over to auction format. And Amy isn't sure if this is a good idea. Will the watchers disappear, and will that hurt Google's searchability? Thanks in advance for your help, Amy.
Well, that's a lot of questions.
It's a lot of questions, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. So the first one is she's correct that if you end any listing and then relist it, it gets a new item number. So it's not this. It's not like you're taking the old listing item number and then changing it, in this case, from fixed price to auction.
Okay.
So yeah, you will lose those watchers off of the, they're not going to carry over to the auction listing.
No, changing format, I believe Blake breaks that link. Yeah. Yeah.
But we do alert watchers. I know for certain that on the, if you have the item, if you're a watcher, it'll be in your watch page. Mm-hmm. And if you go to look for the listing in all, if you sort them for all, there'll be some listings that have ended. If the seller has relisted it in any way, shape, or form by relisting the item, and even if they change the format, it'll say the seller has relisted the item so the watcher can then find it.
But with this one, would it not be sell similar? Because if you relist, it's going to relist same format.
When you relist it, it's going to list in the same format, but mm-hmm. you have a chance to go down and edit it, and you can edit the format at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the only thing we're not sure of is if in this particular case where you go from fixed price to auction is whether or not eBay will send you an email if you've set that up. Like we were talking earlier before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
We were discussing Amy's question. We weren't sure. I know that I get emails when somebody has relisted an item because we've set it up that way. But I'm not sure if it happens for this, which isn't that common to change formats.
No, it's not common. No, I definitely get emails to say that item you watched that ended is back up. Now's your chance, second chance to buy it now. But yeah. I don't recall seeing it for an auction. So my guess will be that we don't send that email. Yeah, just keep that in mind when you're thinking about what you're going to do. You know, maybe if you've got a lot of watchers there and you want to keep them interested, another thing you could try is send an offer to your watchers.
That's what I was going to say.
Ah, stole your thunder.
Well, no, I'm glad you got there before me. It's just that it seems like it would be a lot easier if you've got six watchers and that many views.
Yeah.
Send an offer to the watchers.
You've got six people there keeping an eye on what you're doing. So, yeah, you've got an opportunity to send them an offer. And maybe that will pique their interest and get you to sale. So you actually won't need to go and do an auction and wait for that to go through.
And, Amy, I have a question for you. It says 1940s Disney Snow White and Three Dwarves. Where were the other four dwarves? Where are they?
Did they come along later?
Yeah, right. They're still upstairs sleeping in the cottage. Well, Amy, I hope this helped. Les, regardless of what you do, let us know how it turns out. We hope whatever path you take is successful and you make a sale.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
The next question that we have was actually called into our voice line at 888-723-4630. Let's listen to it now.
Hey, Griff and Alan, this is Lori Bilyeu, Caveman 2013. Just have a quick question regarding the seller update with regard to the change to the way items not as described return cases are handled. I just wanted to clarify that if the seller does not respond in those 3 days and eBay automatically steps in and provides a refund, if that would be considered eBay stepping in without seller resolution and causing a defect on the account. I didn't see anything about that, so I just wanted to clarify if that would be considered the same situation as when a buyer asks eBay to step in when a seller hasn't responded in time for similar situations. Just wanted to clarify that. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Well, what do you think?
I think if eBay has to step in and resolve the situation, typically ends in a defect for the seller. We give sellers some time to step in and make it right for the buyer. Give a good buyer experience. And if sellers do that, then there's no defect. But if it gets to a point where eBay has to manually step in, review the situation, issue a refund or whatnot, I believe that's a defect for the seller.
And just for clarity, if the buyer opens up in any instance a return request and the seller just never answers it, like they didn't have it set up to auto respond accept, so they just let it sit there, that's automatically going to escalate. And we'll warn the seller. I know you get an email or a note that says, you know, hey, if you don't take care of this, it's going to automatically escalate to us. In which case, if we find in the buyer's favor, that's going to count against you.
Yeah.
And nothing in the seller update that was recently announced actually changes that fact.
No, I didn't see any information in the update that changes that. So just a good reminder to always keep an eye on the cases or anything that comes into the resolution center. And if you're going on vacation, maybe keep your account available on your phone. If you can do that, just keep an eye on everything because you want to make sure you're making buyers happy. And if you're making buyers happy, then you're not going to end up with defects.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so
or an unhappy customer, which to me is more important than
anything. You don't want to do anything that would risk, you know, your account facing any restrictions or things like that. So yeah, if you're running an eBay business and you have people buying things, it's always a good idea to keep an eye on your incoming messages and queries.
Lori, I hope that helped clarify how that works for you. Make sure you always respond to any seller case, whether it's returns or dissatisfaction or an email post-sale. It's just the courteous professional thing to do. Now, our last is an email that, again, came into podcast@ebay.com. I'm going to read it, and then, Alan, we'll talk about it, but I'd love to hear your point of view on this.
All right.
It says, this is from John. I typically use the eBay search filters when buying. I like to sort by price and ending time. The eBay results show sponsored items that do not apply to the search filter criteria. The results become confusing since they don't follow the chosen filter, and this makes for a disappointing buyer experience. Is there a way to filter out sponsored items when searching and/or filter out sponsored items permanently from any search? Thank you, John.
Well, this is an interesting one.
This is a multifaceted question. There's a lot of different stuff going on here.
Yeah, and we usually don't get questions from buyers sent into the podcast.
We don't.
Because we talk mostly about selling. So great that a buyer has reached out to us. So thanks, John, for that. And thanks for sending through your experience of buying on eBay or buying anywhere online. I think sponsored or promoted items are common on all marketplaces and all e-commerce sites. So interesting that John mentions that he finds some of the promoted listings on eBay irrelevant.
Yeah.
there isn't a way to block them as far as I'm aware. I don't think you can do it. So you do have to see them in your feed. How I would look at this, I think it's a warning or a message to sellers that there are buyers out there who are kind of glancing over sponsored listings because they're irrelevant. Yeah. So message to sellers is make sure they're relevant as much as you can. Make sure you have great photos, great title, a good price.
Item specifics.
All of that good stuff that will help with your search engine optimization on eBay and then outside of eBay. Like, don't use promoted listings to boost up a listing that isn't great in the hopes that, well, if I promote it, I'll get the sale anyway.
Right,
and that,
exactly. You know,
perfect. Promoting something that isn't great, isn't optimized for the site, is bad for the site overall. It's bad for all sellers. It's bad for the buying experience. So I would say make sure you get your listings clean, crisp, at a great price for the market. You know, look at what your competitors are doing. And then if you promote that, you should have no problem at all selling it. But if you're using promoted listings to game the search results,
this is what you get.
Then this is what John is experiencing, and it's turning him off. He's not. Maybe if he keeps seeing promoted listings like that, he will go elsewhere. He'll stop searching as much on eBay. So it is harmful to the marketplace overall. And we want all sellers to be selling. And, you know, we're all in this together. So my advice would just be to keep your listings finely tuned. So we have buyers out there like John who can look at them and actually make purchases. Because I feel the same to John when I go to sites and I see promoted listings. I do tend to gloss over them. But now and again, you do see good promoted items.
The ones that turn me off as a buyer are the ones where they're relevant, but they're just obviously priced too high.
Uh-huh.
And I can find lower priced items just below the sponsored. That's definitely not working for that seller.
Yeah. You know, you can see if you've got a new inventory line in, a new item you want to sell and you want to get it a boost in search results, and it's at a good price and maybe buyers aren't aware of it, it's a new brand, that's a great use of promoted listings. But if you have a listing that's been sitting there for months or years, it's not selling, it's overpriced, and you promote that, that's not really a good use of promoted listings. You want to make sure it's a competitive listing. So,
well, John, we're sorry. We can't tell you what you'd like to hear, which is there's a way to filter out sponsored listings. There isn't. But hopefully sellers have heard your complaint and will work extra hard to make sure that their promoted listings are relevant in every way, shape, and form. Well, yes. Alan, that's it.
Well, thank you, Griff. That was fun.
It was. It's always great fun to answer seller questions. And if you want to send your question or comment in for inclusion on a future episode of the podcast, just call us at 888-723-4630. And where do they go if they're not, they're a little shy, they don't want to leave anything on our voice line?
Of course. If you have an accent like me and you're self-conscious, that's okay. You can
Wait, back up. What? You're a host on the show and you're self-conscious. I don't believe
it. Very self-conscious. if you prefer not to call, if you don't have access to a phone, you can reach out to us via email. The email is podcast@ebay.com.
That's it.
And then also on the community page, which is ebay.com/podcast, on the right side of the page, there's a little button to submit your feedback or questions. So we do check in on that regularly.
Yeah.
And we get questions from there too.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because while I was out on medical leave, you know, nursing my new knees back to health, I didn't know that I was supposed to check that.
Oh.
And so, you know, our person that was checking it before is no longer here. So there's a little backlog of questions in that queue.
All right.
But I'm going to get to them, I promise.
Okay. We're sorry about the backlog, but we'll be doing Q&A for the next couple of weeks, I guess.
We'll be doing a lot of stuff for the next couple of weeks. Well, Alan, that's our episode for this week. Time for a little housekeeping.
Yes, of course. Remember, if you'd like to join the fun here on the eBay for Business podcast, either as a seller with a question or maybe even as a segment guest, please call us on 888-723-4630.
Yeah, that's 888-723-4630. And the best part, as I've said over and over every week for the last year and a half, you can call that number any time of day, any day of the week. Leave a question or comment, and we just might put it on the air. And you know what? We are looking for fresh new seller guests to talk about areas where they're an expert.
Always looking for new sellers.
So if you're interested in being on the podcast, hey, and if you come on, we let you promote your business, your website, whatever.
Instagram, Tinder.
Well, I don't know.
Plenty of fish, right. Whatever. All your handles.
Swipe to the left. 888-723-4630. Or
if you're not a call on the phone kind of person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That is podcast@ebay.com.
We all have our own ideas of what constitutes fun. But if your idea of fun is meeting up with other eBay sellers, you are going to want to check out the eBay events page on Community and search for an event in your area. It could be a meetup. It could be eBay coming to your town. You never know. And you can get there at ebay.com/seller events.
And on your list of eBay weekly to-dos, make sure you visit the eBay community for our weekly chat every Wednesday with eBay staff. That starts at 1 p.m. Pacific. Go to ebay.com/community chat and we will see you there every Wednesday at 1 to 2 Pacific.
Special thanks this week to Nate Hayward from the eBay shipping team.
Yeah, and Jen Deal from Seller Marketing. I'm your host, Alan Aisbett.
I'm Griff, and you can join us next week for episode 83. When our theme will be creating the right promotional strategies to boost your sales.
Nice. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.